Our top story for this half hour, Israel bombs raining down on the besieged Gaza Strip for the 14th day in a row, leaving a trail of death and destruction in the blockaded territory. At least 20 Palestinians have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes that hit residential buildings in Khan Yunis. That's in the south of the Gaza Strip. Dozens more were injured there. And over to central Gaza, Israeli attacks killed several people in the city of Deir al-Bala. The death toll from the two-week aggression is now around 4,000. The aerial attacks, coupled with the total blockade by Israel, has worsened the humanitarian situation as well. Food and water supplies are running out, while hospitals are under immense strain. The UN chief has voiced concern over the situation in Gaza.
Both of my humanitarian appeals are essential in and of themselves. And to help realize these two appeals, I am calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. For nearly 2 weeks, the people of Gaza have gone without any shipments of food, water, medicine, and other essentials. Civilians in Gaza desperately need core services and supplies, and for that we need rapid, unimpeded humanitarian access. We need food, water, medicine, and fuel now. We need it at scale, and we need it to be sustained.
Guterres was speaking in a press conference in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Israel has cut off supply of electricity, water, fuel, and medicines to Gaza, home to 2.3 people. In the meantime, Egyptian media say the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt will be opened on Friday to send relief aid into the territory. The World Health Organization has also called for a daily aid flow, including fuel, into Gaza.
Fuel is also needed for hospital generators, ambulances, and desalination plants, and we urge Israel to add fuel to the life-saving supplies allowed to enter Gaza. Our trucks are loaded and ready to go. We're working with Egypt and Palestine Red Crescent societies to deliver our supplies into Gaza as soon as the Rafah crossing is opened.
But one of the most critical items which need to be added to that convoy is fuel. Fuel to make sure these desalination plants can run. Fuel to make sure these bakeries can run. Fuel to make sure that UN partners can actually implement the most essential operations, and fuel to ensure these hospitals can sustain their operations and can sustain lives. So fuel is absolutely a top priority.
Hamas has fired a barrage of rockets toward Israel's positions as it presses ahead with its retaliation for Israel's relentless bombardment of the fully besieged Gaza Strip. The Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, say they've targeted Tel Aviv in response to the regime's war crimes against Palestinians. The resistance group also fired missiles at Ashkelon in southern Israel earlier today. At least two missiles have reportedly hit Sderot. Sirens also sounded in the northern city of Nahariya for the first time. Meantime, Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement, say they have struck an Israeli settlement in the occupied territories. According to Tel Aviv, over 1,400 Israelis have been killed in attacks by the resistance front since October the 7th. Some 4,500 others have also been wounded. Well, this just in, an Israeli air raid has destroyed the historical Al-Omari Mosque in northern Gaza Strip. This is in continuation of the indiscriminate attacks being carried out by the Israeli regime against the besieged Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime is also cracking down on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, where troops have raided the Nur Shams refugee camp. At least 13 Palestinians were killed in the raid on the camp in the city of Tul Karm. That's according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Five of those killed are children. Israeli forces arrested around 50 Palestinians as well. Troops also conducted raids in other parts of the West Bank in the past 24 hours, including in the cities of Al-Khalil and Beit La. Tensions remain high in the occupied West Bank as Palestinians are outraged at the Israeli regime's ongoing war in the Gaza Strip. More than 80 Palestinians have lost their lives in the West Bank since the Gaza War broke out on October the 7th. Monarch Candil is joining us now from Ramallah with all the latest on the Israeli raids and crackdowns that are continuing in the occupied West Bank by the Israeli regime forces. Mona?
Well, following 30-hour offensive in the refugee camp of Nur Shams in Tul Kerem, Israeli forces withdrew from this refugee camp, leaving 13 Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli soldiers, including at least 5 Palestinian minors. Dozens had been wounded, and 10 Palestinians were detained by the Israeli forces from the refugee camp of Nur Shams. The operation started early on Thursday when Israeli troops said their drones had operated as well in the Nur Shams refugee camp, and that drone fired rockets at a group of Palestinians. They believe that those Palestinian, including Palestinian fighters who had been clashing with Israeli soldiers and opening fire at Israeli checkpoints near the city of Tul Kerem, northern the occupied West Bank. This is what the Israeli military said, and that's why they raided the refugee camp of Tul Kerem. The operation left clear destruction in the refugee camp, large-scale destruction in the areas. And unfortunately, since yesterday, the Israeli forces had imposed kind of curfew on the refugee camp, preventing people and paramedics, ambulances to transfer those who were wounded from the refugee camp to the hospitals. Palestinians who had been killed, the martyrs, had remained in one of the mosques there until the operation ended. As you have said, the operation and the detention of Palestinians were not only in the refugee camp of Nur Shams. Early on Friday, Israeli troops raided several areas across the occupied West Bank and detained up to the moment at least 77 Palestinians. The majority of those detention had taken place in the cities of Al-Khalil as well as in Beit Lahem. At least 35 Palestinians were detained only in Al-Khalil, including activists, members of the Israeli 7th of October.
All right, I believe we are experiencing some sound issues with our correspondent Mona Candil from Ramallah. Hopefully we'll figure that out and have her join us once again. But spokesman of the International Schiller Institute, Harley Schlanger, is joining us from Potsdam, Germany. Sir, welcome to the program. First of all, give us your perspective on how events have transpired over the past few days and the Israeli indiscriminate aerial assault on Gaza continues amidst the international condemnation.
Well, it's definitely the case that Israel is violating international law and that the Western powers are giving them an open door to do it. The fact that Biden was there, Schultz was there from Germany, Sunak came from England. The only one who hasn't shown up is Zelensky, and maybe that's because Zelensky is part of a neo-Nazi government. But the fact of the matter is that the Israelis are showing no hesitancy to violate international law, and they can do it because they're getting a green light. Now, I think it's important to note that the attempt of the Biden administration to clear Israel of any responsibility for the bombing of the Al-Aliyah hospital is filled with contradictions. You know, the idea that the Israelis wouldn't attack a hospital, they've already attacked over 100 hospitals. So what we're looking at is a policy of genocide. And yesterday at the United Nations Security Council, once again, the United States vetoed a ceasefire resolution. So the United States and the NATO allies are being exposed to the whole world as supporters of genocide, extremist policy, violation of international law. So where's the rules-based order that we hear so much about from Tony Blinken?
We're going to go back to Mona, our correspondent, Mona Candil in Ramallah. Now, Mona, please pick up where you left off. You were bringing us up to speed on the recent Israeli attacks and aggression that are continuing in the West Bank as well.
Yes, we were saying that at least two journalists had been detained today, and this brings the number of Palestinian journalists behind bars to 27 Palestinian journalists. Palestinians who had been detained by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October also had reached 930 people were detained across the occupied West Bank, including journalists, activists, majority of them are Palestinian members of the Hamas movement, and parliamentarians as well, members of the Palestinian Legislative Council. 74 Palestinian people had been killed by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, many of them while taking part in anti-Israel protests. One Palestinian woman was shot and killed while returning back to his hometown, as an Israeli checkpoint was at the entrance to her hometown, Deir Jir. They opened fire at the vehicle. They killed her, and her son was wounded. So at the same time, when the Israeli military is going on with their violence and aggression and these atrocities against the people of the Gaza Strip, the Israeli military are doing their utmost as well to prevent people from taking part in any protests and demonstrations here in the occupied West Bank, preventing Palestinians from being engaged in different forms of resistance. And that's why every day the Israeli forces raid the Palestinian cities, villages, refugee camps, and arrest dozens of people, young people, children, activists, people from all walks of life, including women, in order to silence the Palestinians, and in fear that Palestinians or Palestinian fighters might infiltrate into the occupied territories in 1948 and to prevent any future anti-Israeli operations there. That's why they are trying to suffocate the people, arrest as more as they can, and to prevent people from transporting within the occupied West Bank, traveling from central the West Bank to northern the West Bank or to southern the West Bank. Up till the day, hundreds of Israeli checkpoints are stationing at every checkpoint. Hundreds of Israeli soldiers are stationing at the military checkpoints, at the entrances to the villages and the cities, in order to make it easy for them to detain the people, mainly those activists and Palestinian fighters.
Harley Schlanger in Potsdam, Germany. Well, let's focus on the U.S.'s support for the Israelis. We've seen the U.S. President and the U.S. Secretary of State traveling to Tel Aviv, basically bolstering the Israelis. But given the level and scope of the massacre of innocent civilians, innocent women and children, how far should the U.S. go in supporting the Israelis?
Well, my view is the U.S. shouldn't be supporting the Israelis at all. They should be supporting a call for an immediate ceasefire. And look, the thing that to realize is there is opposition even in the West. It's encouraging to see all around the world demonstrations opposing the Israeli policy. But I don't know if people are aware of this, but there were hundreds of Jewish activists that took over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. for a couple of hours on Wednesday. Over 300 were arrested, and they were opposing Israeli policies. These were Jews who were basically saying, "Not in my name." A top State Department official, Josh Paul, who's in charge of the Political Military Affairs Committee, resigned because he said there's a culture of silence in the State Department. Remember, the State Department put out a memo saying there must be no talk of ceasefire or de-escalation. So within the United States, there is some opposition. The problem is within the Congress, there's total support for Israel. And Biden is using this to tie together the request for aid for Ukraine and Israel. The United States is offering another $10 billion to Israel, which doesn't really need the money for what they're doing. More importantly, though, are the two carrier strike groups, the USS Gerald Ford and the USS Dwight Eisenhower, that have been moved into the Eastern Mediterranean. 2,000 military troops have been put on alert, U.S. troops, supposedly to deter Hezbollah. Well, it looks as though if that situation in the north, which your correspondent was just describing, if that becomes more of a military confrontation, will the U.S. get involved in it? Now, we're told Biden is saying no, but you know, Biden also said we would not be providing certain kinds of weapons to Ukraine, and the U.S. did. So I think there's a possibility that there will be a U.S. involvement, which would be utterly foolish. It would completely destroy the image of the United States in the rest of the world as a peaceful power. So I think the trips of all these American officials to Israel really are designed for domestic whipping up the war party in the United States.
Thanks a lot. Spokesman of the International Schiller Institute, Harley Schlanger, joining us from Potsdam, Germany. The pro-Palestinian rallies are now picking up steam. Another rally has also started in support of the Palestinians in Dhaka in Bangladesh. Also, Jordan and the Jordanian capital Amman has been the scene of constant anti-Israeli demonstrations. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
October 7th, 2023. A heavy barrage of rockets fired from the Gaza Strip. In 20 minutes, more than 5,000 rockets target Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Tel Aviv. A doomsday scenario for the Israeli regime. Hamas beats the hell out of the occupation forces. At the same time, the Palestinian resistance group fields its gunmen. They cross into several highly protected Israeli towns. In a dramatic reversal of roles, Palestinian fighters control illegal settlements near Gaza while armed settlers run for their lives. Hamas fighters capture dozens of Israeli soldiers and civilians. The Israeli regime is caught off guard, its military and intelligence capability humiliated. This is Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the pent-up anger of a nation which has been under occupation for decades. History is in the making.
The flood of Al-Aqsa is a normal response from the Palestinian people to the continuous oppression and offensive of the Israeli troops against our people for the last 75 years.
To know more about Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, we talked to Mr. Khalid Qaddoumi, Hamas's representative in Iran. He told us why the resistance group launched the operation in the first place.
Would you please describe the Al-Aqsa storm operation, its significance, its goals, and why did Hamas choose this time to take action?
We've been continuously trying to convey our messages to the international community that we've been tortured, we've been criminalized, we've been victimized by this Israeli occupation, declared occupation by the international law. Nobody tried to have some serious or enforce those decisions of the international organizations like UN. Heaps, stacks of papers against the Israeli atrocities. None of them was implemented. Either you'll find the American veto ready to impede the implementation of the justice for our people, or you'll find no teeth for those decrees and resolutions by United Nations organizations, even the General Security Council or the General Council.
An unprecedented infiltration of Hamas forces into the Israeli-occupied territories and taking over some of the regime's military headquarters marked the worst failure the regime's intelligence services have ever suffered. This is Hossein Kanani Muqaddam, a former IRGC commander expert on regional issues with special focus on Palestine. He believes that the regime's days are numbered.
It seems that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has initiated the downfall of the Israeli regime. As an example of hybrid warfare formulated by the Palestinians, the operation has challenged and humiliated the regime. And to quote from the leader of the Islamic Revolution, it has inflicted an irreparable defeat on the regime. It's quite unprecedented for the Palestinians to capture, injure, or kill so many Israeli forces within this short period of time.
Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has been dubbed as the biggest attack on Israel in years, effectively bringing the regime to the edge of a precipice. But what made Hamas to launch such a full-scale attack? Was it truly unprovoked, as claimed in the West?
A great blessing.
Only a couple of weeks before the operation, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu waved a map at the United Nations General Assembly on which all Palestinian territories had been wiped out.
Jordan, Israel, to Europe.
Netanyahu's prolonged policy of ignoring Palestinians as a nation with a right to self-determination has definitely acted as a catalyst for an operation of this proportion.
A rally in the West Bank for funeral of one or two of our shuhada, two of our youngsters, non-civilian, has been shot dead by the settlers. Hence, we're continuously talking about the besieged people in Gaza. We're continuously talking about the police policy by the Israeli government in West Bank. Nobody is listening to us. They are, on the contrary, they wanted to liquidate our issue, to make our people continuously slavery-hood under the apartheid regime of Israel.
The fact is, the ongoing escalation should take no one by surprise. Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is a serious attempt by the people in Gaza to break the regime's 16-year siege. Since the Nakba in 1948, which resulted in the forcible displacement of 750,000 Palestinians, the Israeli regime has committed with complete impunity unnumbered human rights violations, including ethnic cleansing, apartheid, and mass killings. Just in the first 9 months of 2023 alone, Israel killed at least 230 Palestinians, a level of violence that has already exceeded the total death toll during 2022.
Israeli settlements built on lands occupied in 1967 war are one of the most serious issues in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. These illegal settlements have created a series of disconnected enclaves throughout the West Bank, disrupting everyday life for the Palestinians.
Soon after Israel took over the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem al-Quds in the June 1967 war, the regime began building settlements in the newly captured occupied territory. Nearly 620,000 Israeli settlers now live in over 200 settlements. The transfer of population into occupied territory is a clear violation of international humanitarian law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. To Mr. Qaddoumi, the current operation is totally in accordance with international laws.
Well, we are in a freedom process. We are defending ourselves against occupation. This is a right which has been granted by the international law and international community. Hence, yes, I agree with you. It is a devastating destruction by the Israeli arsenal, barbaric arsenal against our innocent people. On the other hand, the morale of our fighters, morale of our nation, publics, we have seen it yesterday, how from inside hospitals, the time they are losing their own beloved people, they are chanting against Israel, they are raising their voices in order to stop this mass massacre created by this barbaric enemy of Israel against our people. For us, we are intensifying our resisting maneuver against this enemy. We are moving forward towards defeating this brutal enemy, and God willing, we are succeeding to achieve our goals.
Roadblocks, checkpoints, and other infrastructure set up to safeguard settlers brutally impede Palestinian movement. But that's not the end of the story. The appropriation of land and water sources for settlement use has led to a loss of livelihoods for farmers and limits the urban development of Palestinian towns and cities. Moreover, violence by armed settlers against Palestinian civilians is also an undeniable part of daily life. During just the first half of 2023, at least 1,148 Israeli settler attacks against Palestinians were recorded. Nasser Abu Sharif, the representative of Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement in Iran, has more to say about Israeli settlers in the occupied territories.
The Israeli settlers have heavy prisons in the West Bank. Netanyahu's fascist government has given the settlers a free rein to kill the Palestinians. Netanyahu has armed them, and there's no single day when a Palestinian doesn't get killed. They want to conquer the whole Palestinian territories. Every day they impose new restrictions against Palestinians living in the West Bank. Therefore, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is the simplest response to all these atrocities. The world knows about these atrocities, the United Nations knows, as do human rights organizations, and they publish reports on them every day, but sad to say, no one takes action. The international community does nothing, and when we do something, they all accuse and condemn us.
Hamas does not recognize Israel, but has said it would observe a truce if the regime withdrew to its 1967 borders.
Welcome to the news section of the program, where we take a look at some news excerpts from different news websites. The geopolitics of Al-Aqsa flood. The Cradle writes, global focus just shifted from Ukraine to Palestine. This new arena of confrontation will ignite further competition between the Atlanticist and Eurasian bloc. These fights are increasingly zero-sum ones, as in Ukraine, only one pole can emerge strengthened and victorious. Hamas's Operation Al-Aqsa flood was meticulously planned. The launch date was conditioned by two triggering factors. First was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu flaunting his new Middle East map at the UN General Assembly in September, in which he completely erased Palestine and made a mockery of every single UN resolution on the subject. Second are the serial provocations at the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque in Al-Quds, including the straw that broke the camel's back. 2 days before Al-Aqsa flood on 5th October, at least 800 Israeli settlers launched an assault around the mosque, beating pilgrims, destroying Palestinian shops, all under the observation of Israeli security forces. Al-Aqsa flood drowns Israeli myths of invincibility. Middle East Monitor writes, Operation Al-Aqsa flood carried out by the armed wing of the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, over the weekend has exposed the fragility of the occupation state of Israel. The Zionist state's famed security and intelligence apparatus failed its citizens spectacularly so, leading to the most serious defeat in its history, stained with the blood of the Palestinians. What is the significance of Hamas's Al-Aqsa flood operation? According to Politics Today, Hamas's Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, as the name suggests, was motivated by a central focus on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Israeli aggression against the holy sites. The aim of the operation is to put an end to the 15-year blockade of Gaza and the related status quo in the Palestinian arena. It can be said that Hamas has achieved this goal at a tactical level in a short period of time. This operation has shaken global public opinion and forced it to take a position. Israeli economy continues to deteriorate as Al-Aqsa flood proceeds. According to Al-Mayadeen, the Israeli stock market saw a 2.3% drop, mainly due to the deteriorating security situation after the launch of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. During the past week, the exchange market fell by 7% as investors grew more concerned about the ongoing confrontations with the resistance in Gaza and the continued targeting of Tel Aviv, which is considered Israel's financial capital. This brings us to the end of this section. Please stay tuned as we go back to our main narrative.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Another factor for the current escalation is the increasing tendency of Arab states to make peace agreements with Israel, as evidenced by the 2020 Abraham Accords. There has recently been strong yet not confirmed speculation that Saudi Arabia is about to make its own agreement with Israel. The Israeli Prime Minister has made clear that he prioritizes peace with Arab states over peace with the Palestinians. A great cause for concern for the Palestinian nation. The Hamas representative in Tehran called Arab states to join the Golden Caravan of Liberation.
So from here, we will see that the outcome of this solidarity among the Muslim nations, among the rational voices in the world, we will conclude a clear victory over the Israeli oppressions. And it is also a message for some official levels in our region who were having illusion of so-called normalization of relation with the Israeli entity. This Israeli entity, they have only the bad news of killing the innocent people. But don't be implicit with their crimes against our children and against our women. What we have only to suggest you to read the history, that you should be part of this golden caravan of liberation, not part of the dark side of the history that is to aside by the enemy.
The Israeli regime has been humiliated in various military confrontations, such as the 33-day war in 2006 and now Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Against such a backdrop, Tel Aviv is playing the victim. But is the regime really a victim? If not, then who is?
For more than 16 years, the residents of Gaza have had no freedom of movement. They can leave through the Israeli-controlled checkpoints if they have an Israeli work permit, or in rare cases, if they have been given special permissions by Israel to receive medical treatment in the occupied West Bank for serious medical conditions. At the same time, the blockade has almost ruined the economy of Gaza. Today, approximately half the population is unemployed. The food supply is also limited by the siege. According to the World Food Program, a considerable portion of the population is food insecure. In 2022, 1.84 million people across Palestine, one-third of the population, did not have enough food to eat. Among these people, 1.1 million people were considered severely food insecure, 90% of whom lived in Gaza. Abu Sharif told us that the real Holocaust is happening in Palestine amid the mainstream media blackout.
The Holocaust was committed by the Europeans against the Jews, not by the Palestinians. Unfortunately, the Jews took advantage of this. The Nazis and the Europeans wanted to get rid of the Jews, so they expelled them from Europe and brought them to Palestine. We are the occupied country. We are the ones whose land has been occupied. Israel was established in the Palestinian land. They are living in our land, which has been usurped by force. We are not aggressors. We are not foreigners in this land. We did not come to this land from abroad. We have been in this land for 6,000 years.
Gaza also suffers from an energy crisis. Due to the Israeli ban on the entry of fuel into Gaza in 2023, Gaza has had only 13 hours of electricity a day. The constant blackouts have prevented water treatment plants from functioning properly.
On the day when Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was carried out, they cut off water in some of the Israeli prisons where the Palestinians were imprisoned and deprived them of even drinking water. Moreover, we are facing the siege of Gaza, which has been going on for 17 years. They let goods come inside the strip in small volumes. They allow us to just remain alive, but they do allow us to progress. They have besieged Gaza for 17 years and committed a crime against humanity. By Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, we want to take revenge on them.
Due to the blockade, hospitals in Gaza lack basic supplies, equipment, and infrastructure and are unable to handle severe cases or provide proper care for the chronically ill. At the same time, Israel systematically targets civilians and non-military civilian infrastructure like residential buildings, hospitals, schools, water treatment plants, making life in Gaza even more unbearable.
But what about the Islamic Republic of Iran? What stance has Tehran adopted regarding developments in the occupied territories? The Israeli Prime Minister has tried to implicate Iran in the ongoing war. But is that true?
The Islamic Republic has made it clear that it genuinely cares about the Palestinian cause. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it takes part in military action in Palestine, whether directly or indirectly. Political analyst Mossadegh Mossadeghpour explained why Iran is not involved in the escalation.
Where does Iran stand in the war between Hamas and Israel?
Here, the position of the Islamic Republic of Iran is to coordinate with the rest of the world. Iran wants to restore peace in the region. For Iran, there is no need to step in the war. The Americans have concluded that they have to help Israel because they found the regime impotent. But Iran doesn't think so about Hamas. And don't forget, Hamas is a small group in comparison to Hezbollah, and if Hezbollah decides to enter the war, the Israeli regime is done. Because of this, Iran is at ease and does not feel any need to get involved in the war. The resistance movement is able enough to face Israel and to defend itself. This is Iran's position.
In fact, Tehran has willingly tried to play a constructive role in resolving tensions in the region. Perhaps the most democratic solution ever has been proposed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
What has Iran proposed for resolving the Israeli-Palestinian crisis?
The leader of the Islamic Revolution put forward a proposal 7-8 years ago, and it was registered in the United Nations. It was a political solution in nature. The proposal suggested that all Palestinians from across the world come back to their homeland, hold a referendum, and establish a government based on the will of the majority. It suggested that Christians, Jews, and Muslims form a single sovereign state. No such thing as a two-state solution. Each side but the Israeli regime agrees with this proposal. The regime disagrees because the result of such a referendum is the annihilation of Israel, which is founded on racism.
Last but not least, the international community has had numerous opportunities to exert pressure on the Israeli regime to change its inhumane apartheid behavior. Yet they have repeatedly failed to take meaningful action.
I want to repeat that this is us who are under occupation. This is us who are getting killed, and this is us who are being accused by the Israeli regime. This is us whose land has been occupied, but unfortunately the world has distorted these realities. They present us who are the victims as the aggressors, and present the enemy that has occupied our land as the victim. This is a distortion of reality which we are faced with in the 21st century.
Israel seeks to normalize crimes against the Palestinians in Gaza with the ultimate goal of erasing Palestine from the map. Yet Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has had a clear message for Tel Aviv. Palestinians do exist and are ready to do whatever it takes to defend their land and their cause.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. We hope you found this program valuable and informative. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Please send us your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyya. we have been discussing the eighth supplication of this prayer manual, and it is on seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions. When Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam would recite the dua of seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions, we are still discussing the first verse and the first phrase where Imam expresses and says, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajanil hirs. O God, I seek refuge in you from the arousal of greed. Now, one of the questions that we would like to discuss, and that is very important, is we have to understand that what is the origin of this greed that comes about in the human being. If we understand the origin, then we will be able to know how to go about rectifying the situation that has come about in ourselves. Now, when it comes to origin, there is a principle that the ethicians mention, which is very important, and that is how the soul is in the state of equilibrium or imbalance. Sometimes it is in the state of balance, and sometimes it is in the state of imbalance.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Basically, the human being has three important faculties in him. One is the faculty of intellect, one is the faculty of anger, and one is the faculty of appetite. If these three faculties are in their states of equilibrium and balance, you find that beautiful things come about and good traits settle in the person's mind and heart. He becomes a good person. He has very beautiful characteristics that he develops because the state of these three faculties are in their balance and in their state of equilibrium. But if they are not in the state of equilibrium and they go to the two excesses of exaggeration and negligence, which in Arabic we call ifrat and tafrit, then you find that blameworthy characteristics ensue and issue from that state that they have. So it is because of this imbalance that we find greed comes about. But we have to know and detect which is that faculty that actually enables greed to come about. Now, before looking at that, this statement that we just mentioned, that, you know, we have three faculties and, you know, they are sometimes in the state of their disequilibrium and sometimes they are in the state of their equilibrium. If they are in the state of their equilibrium, you find good characteristics issue from the person. But if you find that they are not in the state of equilibrium, then blameworthy characteristics slowly and gradually develop in that person. In order to understand this, I would like to quote a very beautiful passage from the commentary of Dua al-Jawshan al-Kabir, written by the great philosopher Mulla Hadi Sabzawari. I just would like to translate what he has already mentioned. I could also mention the Arabic portion, but then because of the limitation of time, we will just look at the translation so that we know that what kind of faculties do we have and how are they when they are in their states of excess and negligence that we mentioned.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
the great philosopher Mulla Hadi Sabzawari, he says that surely the human being has three faculties of the soul. A, the faculty of comprehension, sometimes known as faculty of intellection. B, the faculty of appetite, which is also known as al-quwwa al-shahawiyya. The first is al-quwwa al-aqliyya, this is al-quwwa al-shahawiyya. And C, the faculty of anger, al-quwwa al-ghadabiyya, also translated as the irascible faculty. The deviation of the faculty of comprehension towards the two directions of excess and negligence are known as jurbuza, when a person, you know, goes to the extreme excess of the faculty of intellect, whereby he makes conclusions without having properly understood the premises. He just goes towards conclusions and makes conclusions and doesn't arrive to the correct conclusions. You'll find this state is known as jurbuza. And then he continues and says, and the other, the state of negligence is known as balaha, silliness. That means he has intellect, but he is very slow in using his intellect, respectively. And then he says, and its state of equilibrium is known as al-hikmah, this faculty of intellect. When it is in the state of its equilibrium, it is known as wisdom, hikmah. Then he continues and says, the deviation of the faculty of appetite towards the two directions of excess and negligence is called sharah. Sharah means gluttony. That is when it is in the state of excess, when your shahwa, al-quwwa al-shahawiyya, your faculty of desire and appetite goes to the extreme. This is known as cupidity or gluttony, which is in Arabic, we call it sharah. And if it is in the state of negligence, it is known as khumud. Khumud is stillness. That means, you know, a person doesn't go to what is necessary for him in life. For example, he doesn't get married. He doesn't go towards food to eat so that he gets strength and does ibadah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He abstains from food just so that, because he says that I don't want to have food, without any proper reason. This is known as khumud. Both of these are reprimanded and blameworthy. And then he says, while its state of equilibrium is known as al-iffa, that is chastity and temperance. When a person has al-quwwa al-shahawiyya and it is not in the two extremes, he uses it according to what Islam has prescribed in a balanced way, that is known as iffa, that means chastity. And then he goes to the third faculty and says, the deviation of the faculty of anger towards the direction of excess and negligence is known as tahawwur, recklessness in the extreme excess, and jubna, cowardice in the negligent part of it. You know, when your right is taken, but you keep quiet, you don't fight for it, for example, this is also blameworthy. And then he says, whereas its state of equilibrium is known as ash-shuja'a, when a person is brave and intrepid, that is when he is in the state of the equilibrium of the faculty of anger. Inshallah, we'll continue with our discussion in our next session. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را
یا سجاد.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's attacks on Palestinian homes and infrastructure continue across the besieged Gaza Strip, killing more people, including women and children. The Israeli regime also cracks down on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, killing at least 13 in the city of Tulkarm. And fresh pro-Palestine protests take place worldwide as anti-Israel sentiments are growing over the regime's war on Gaza.